You, as you're probably already aware, are listening to Radio Flange Goblet, and the voices in your head are not deceiving you. It is now time for our weekly film chat natathon, the After Movie Diner, which this week comes from Berkshire's Guff. A teeny, 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 ooh, it really is so wee, Itoe in Dunny on the Splinge. A small and tiny, 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 a really very wee outcrop of dirty earth that floats just off the coast of Norfolk and is inhabited mainly by men with ruddy stomachs, large moustaches, an overabundance of corduroy, and a penchant for naughty goings-on in a barn with a Miss Petula Thigh, who is the only lady on the island. Lucky beast. Anyway, there are also quite a few voles and the odd goat, so don't worry, enough to go around. On the menu tonight, there is split knee soup. That's a hollowed out elk's knee with some soup in it. Don't ask the flavour of the broth, that really makes the chef mad, and he's liable to cover you in his own special gravy, which stings the eyes and burns the hair off the knuckles. Also, the special tonight is sliced dog with a garnish of really, really tiny, minuscule arugula. Whatever the highly waxed arse that is. For entertainment tonight, there is an old ship's captain, known in these parts as Pip Monkey the Wealth, who will blow on an empty bottle and slap his belly if you pay him a farthing in old wooden money. Your server for the evening is Terence, and he's lovely. Just keep his teeth away from your shins and you'll be fine. If you must tip him at the end of this hellish ordeal, make sure it's in clumps of dried mice spit, or he'll most likely insist on rubbing you while singing high-pitched Welsh songs about the women of the mountains disdained for suet pudding.
You're listening to the After Movie Diner with your host, John Cross.
Hello and welcome to the
much.
After...
No, just come on. It's fine. I just said thank you.
Okay. Hello and welcome to the After Movie Diner. And this week, just like last week, we are up to our necks in it. Or rather, as it's sleazy sprayed of springtime, let's say up to our balls in it.
Sleazy upside sprayed, down, upside down.
But upside
balls.
Down, upside down.
We're upside down. We're doing handstands.
Right.
In the sleeves.
In the sleeves.
And it's up to our balls.
Definitely, definitely. So we are, yes, we are yet
our
again...
hanging balls.
We are yet again treading the murky waters of a sleazy spader springtime.
And
I personally couldn't be
spader's eggs.
Couldn't be happier about that.
Oh, it's sleazy spader springtime. Welcome to the show. Oh, it's a sleazy spader springtime. I want you all to know that if you please, there's James Spader Sleaze and it's got nowhere else to go. So loosen all your blouses, give your nose a damn good.
Before we go ahead and order our food...
Erva is French for egg, right? Or is that Earth? That's Earth. Erva is something completely different.
Yeah, don't go off on one.
I'm sorry. I just thought that describing these movies as like spader's egg...
Spader's
seems
egg.
...seems like suitably weird, grim,
so
it's and vaguely
an, it's
sexual.
An, it's an Earth...
Yeah,
oeuvre.
Space is Earth
oeuvre.
Oeuvre. Oeuvre. Oeuvre do Earth.
Earth oeuvre, which sounds something like a new Swedish type of vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which Spader will use in his
yes.
sex games.
Behold the new Earth oeuvre we will be cleaning up. I can't really do a Swiss accent.
Is it because oeuvre rhymes with hoover in your brain?
No, it's just
the
how
oeuvre,
it sounds.
The oeuvre,
it sounds like something you might buy in IKEA. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, buy the new Earth oeuvre. It's probably 15 dowel pens and a fucking Allen wrench, and that's
right,
it.
Right, which would make for an interesting hoover.
Oh,
Good luck. People are scraping up dirt with their Allen keys.
But anyway, we do have some questions because we we asked people to let us know stuff that they want answering about Spader, but I do feel like we should possibly order first. So let's quickly figure stuff out.
I haven't figured out what I want yet.
Although, hang on, no. A reason why I started this early is because one of the questions is from Andy Lunn, who you'll remember from last year's Sleazy Spade, and he's commented on lots of the shows, to be fair. One of his questions, bear this in mind while you're looking,
okay,
using the diner menu for the evening,
okay,
which dish would best represent James Spader?
Ooh,
and I think that
question.
Is a damn good question.
That is
so,
an excellent question.
As you peruse the menu looking for tonight's Kvestibles, just bear that in mind.
All right. I guess the Middle Eastern vegetarian sampler. Do you know what I mean? Sounds like a holiday in Jerusalem with Spader.
I quite like the fact that the appetizer heading is appetizers that tantalize. That's almost Spader-ish.
That's Spader-ish. Field of Dreams.
Yeah, don't just read things out.
No, I'm just thinking about... I'm thinking about like things that Spader would read off the menu that would make you feel a bit weird inside. If he looked at you and went, Field of Dreams, you'd go, whoa.
What, like Argentinian style grilled skirt steak wrap?
Yeah, that's got to be one, right?
The Argentinian skirt steak wrap.
Yeah, that could be.
No, the Argentinian style grilled skirt steak wrap. That's my Spader impression.
Grilled chicken breast oreganata?
Anything with breast in it.
I have to say, I think colossal meatballs, surely.
Colossal meatballs. The colossal meatballs.
Colossal meatballs.
Of James Spader.
James Spader.
Yes. Maybe colossal meatballs.
I think we're going to have to... I don't think we're going to do much better than the Argentinian grilled skirt steak.
Just because that has so many connotations that he can play with,
exactly,
plus plenty of consonants that he can roll his lascivious tongue all over.
Right.
Of course, equally, you might just go pork chops.
Giant hand-rolled water bagel. That sounds like one of Spader's sex moves.
Giant what?
Look, giant hand-rolled water bagel. Hello, my dear. Would you care for a giant hand-rolled water bagel?
No, that's something he would order on the blacklist while drinking one of his...
I feel like anybody with any courage would cast Spader as the new Bond. That's what I think.
You want Spader as the new Bond?
I want Spader as the... I mean, he's basically a dead-eyed psychopath in the books.
Right.
With, like, who's incredibly horny and likes killing people. I feel like Spader is... He could really do a job.
Isn't Spader at this point anyway?
Yeah.
Because he is with the blacklist.
But he's just England, isn't he? Like a bit flabby and...
No, but he's bordering on like camp and self-parody at this point.
Again, Britain.
Oh, you mean James Spader?
Like the Brexit Bond.
The
could
Brexit
be James
Bond.
Spader.
Could
yeah.
be James Spader. Yeah, okay.
Like flabby and bordering on parody. Thank you very much. I think maybe we do we?
I'm sorry, I'm still looking.
Yeah, me too. Sorry, we'll be done soon. I can't figure out what I want at all. I don't normally have this much trouble.
It's got a good menu though, right?
Yeah.
So we've decided that the Argentinian heavily grilled skirt steak wrap.
Yeah. Either that, my vote is the giant hand rolled water bagel. Because okay. I think it sounds like one of Spader's sex moves.
So that's yours, and my one is the Argentinian style grilled skirt steak wrap. That's what I'm going for. So that's our first question from Monsignor Andy Lund. And it was a damn good
I wish we had a better menu, mate, because sometimes you do get like weird things on the menu that sound a bit like, you know,
something Spader. I think we've picked a couple of crackers though.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't think you want anything as obvious. Did you just say pork sword sandwich? Yeah, I don't think it's ever going to be anything as obvious as pork sword sandwich.
Probably not. Could I get the city frittata omelette?
Sure, what that probably
Whole grain?
Seven Grange or?
Seven Grange, yeah, magic. Love it.
And
yes, could I get the French toast, please?
Okay, anything with that?
Yes, could I get bacon, sausage, and the two eggs, and I'll have those poached.
Jesus.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. So,
that's one enormous dinner you just ordered for yourself. They're going to need like two plates for that.
What do you mean?
Well, French toast, poached eggs, bacon, and sausage.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it sounds amazing.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, mate, you know.
Yeah, that's true. When you're talking about Spader.
You have to go with the gusto.
To quote
Johnny Unicorn, you have to go with
the
gusto.
Who's Johnny Unicorn?
Oh, you haven't been listening to the Motor Media Infomercial Podcast. You'll be losing points for that.
Points with who?
Matt Farley.
All right, okay. But just Matt Farley, right?
And Johnny Unicorn.
Who's Johnny Unicorn?
He's a musician stroke podcaster who does stuff that Matt has played on his show.
Oh, okay. He's not like another pseudonym for Matt.
No. No. His Johnny Unicorn has another pseudonym, which is Sorsnajor. Yeah, which is complicated to say and spell.
Okay.
And find on Spotify. Okay.
I do occasionally tune into the Motor Media Infomercial
Podcast. I tune into every single episode.
And I'm not to give up my podcast. I don't get as much time as you do.
So anyway,
are we going to start with questions? Or
yeah, we're
going
to start. We started with the Andy Lung question. So we got another one from Andy Lung.
Okay.
If you had to introduce a Spader virgin to the great man's work, by the way, there is no such thing.
Not a virgin to Spader, because I would not do that.
No, don't. Well, I would imagine that very few virgins exist in Spader's realm at this point.
Once they reach a certain distance
from Spader,
they cease being a virgin.
Yeah. So if you had to introduce a Spader virgin to the great man's work, how would you go about it? Not just the choices of film, but would you utilize any of Spader's sleaze moves and techniques to get them on board? Mm. Well, I've got my
problem with Spader is this, right?
Right.
I haven't actually seen, and I wanted to address this with you.
Okay.
I haven't actually seen the three sleazy Spader classics ever. And I know they're like, you know, classics and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, The Secretary, Crash.
No, I've seen Secretary, but I haven't seen Crash. I haven't seen Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And I've never seen Less Than Zero.
Well, Less Than Zero isn't sleazy. He plays a scumbag. He doesn't play a sleazy.
Okay.
I mean, he hangs around his swimming pools a lot with his hair greased back. But it's not like he's only in it. Like, the fifth, maybe sixth down the cast list.
All right, well, I haven't seen Sex, Love, Videotape or Crash. I have seen Secretary. I guess I'd probably start with Secretary, because that's the first time I really realised quite how...
See, I think...
relatably sleazy he could be.
I think Secretary is too obvious.
No, but I'm just saying, he's asking how to start them off.
Right.
Well, where else would you start except with him at his... Because everything I feel like that I know about Spader and his sleaziness springs from that realisation.
Okay, but before I...
colours everything that comes after.
Before I'd even seen Secretary, there were a handful of films I'd watched Spader in that I went... He does an awful lot of knobbing in films, like where there doesn't need to be any knobbing. Like 2 Days in the Valley is a prime example. Doesn't need to be any knobbing, but there seemingly is, just to kind of like facilitate Spader's bloodlust.
Well, I gladly watch that one again.
He's also incredibly... So these are the two that I would actually start people off on.
All right, okay.
Because I feel like it is the youthful burgeoning of the sleaze. And he also plays incredibly, like, floppy-haired cunts in these films.
Okay.
And that is Pretty in Pink.
Okay.
And the Rachel Papers.
What's the Rachel Papers?
Where he essentially plays the same person as he plays in Pretty in Pink.
What's the Rachel Papers?
The Rachel Papers is Dexter Fletcher and Ione Skye. And Ione Skye is... the unlikely pairing of Dexter Fletcher and Ione Skye is an American school exchange student thing abroad in like some semester for university or whatever, and her and Dexter Fletcher start having it away. kind of thing. And like Spader is the sort of slightly douchebaggy friend
of
I forget, but I presume her.
Right.
I think he might be like the other suitor to her. I haven't seen it in fucking a dog's age, but like
well, I've never seen that. I could watch that one.
Yeah, I don't want to do it for this show. Again, third lead. I'm not interested in third
lead.
Oh, right,
fair enough. Okay.
It's not a slip. But I'm saying if you want to start someone off, we'll do that. And
okay, I see what you're saying.
And in terms of...
But if they watch Pretty in Pink, don't they have to sit through that insufferably annoying git?
Yeah, but that only makes the Spader sleaze even more apparent.
Really?
Yeah, I think it bolsters the sleaze.
All right.
Oh,
I see where you're coming from.
If you want to see my favourite Spader performance of all time...
What is your favourite Spader performance?
My favourite Spader performance of all time is in Mannequin. Because he's not sleazy in it at all. He's just like... It's a Monty Python-esque, like, Mr. Anchovy-type performance. You know, like that, like weaselly, whiny kind of character that Palin sometimes plays.
Yeah.
That Cleese is always insulting.
Yeah.
He basically plays that character, but, like, with Spader ooze. It's kind of wonderful.
All right. Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
But, no, how would I convince them that Spader is... Well, the first thing I would have to do is I have to make sure that my hair was insanely floppy. That would be the first thing. The second thing, V-neck, have to deploy the V-neck minus shirt move.
This is what you would do.
Yeah, because he said...
But no, I understand, but how would that encourage... Like, how would looking at you with floppy hair and a V-neck sweater make something go, I want to see more men.
Right.
You know what I mean? Surely you'd turn them off that for good.
Yeah, maybe. I was going to add a beige summer suit.
I think our problem is
neither of us
Spader accomplishes what he accomplishes by virtue of some ineffable, sleazy, oozing essence.
That flows
throughout him.
Yeah.
That could, you know,
with
best we could hope to extract with some kind of a, you know, a needle. Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe. But for
maybe make cupcakes.
We
out
could
of it.
Never hope. Nobody except Spader can hope to get people to do things in the way that he gets people to do things.
Would
it's
you
an entirely
watch
unique
a Being John Malkovich style movie where two wily gentlemen such as ourselves extract Spader's essence using a syringe,
right?
Put it into Magnolia-style cupcakes, and it causes the women of the city to, like, go bananas with lust.
I thought you were going to say, do you want to do a Being Joe Malkovich style thing where we look through the eyes of Spader? And before you're even going to finish the sentence, I would say, God, no. Not without burning my retinas out first.
No, because that would literally
imagine
just...
the things that Spader sees on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It would be like in From Beyond, where Jeffrey Combs has like his third eye and everything, and he sees like weird, like globule knob-shaped aliens floating in the air.
I would think it would be more like those like 50s cartoons of like X-ray specs, where like Spader just sees everybody new.
Well, there's that as well. So anyway, that's one question. So I would definitely deploy the V-neck minus shirt technique.
I feel like that would be a mistake. I feel like you would have to. This is how you
maybe
would do
a trilby
it
at a jaunty angle.
This is how you
and
do
an
it.
Espresso cup with a
what you
sexual
would do,
horse in it.
What you would do is you would find out what their favorite TV show was,
right?
And then you would splice,
right?
Splice in single frames
of James
like
Spader.
A Spader,
yeah. But
like
that would
doing
be,
really disgusting things.
But that wouldn't
would be
like
that
would.
And then they'd be like, "Why am I?"
But that wouldn't be a Spader technique. That would be.
Are you telling me that Spader would invite people around to like ostensibly watch the Super Bowl or whatever, and instead he splices in like shots of like hardcore pornography? You know what I mean? So that people leave his party going, I feel really weird. And like I like that the world is a meaningless void of ever unfulfilled appetite.
Okay, so that's our answer. We've got to move on because we've got some other questions. Kerry Mellick, who recently started listening to us thanks to appearance on the projection booth, says, I haven't seen this movie, referring to Bad Influence, which is the
influence.
Film we are covering.
Right. Should we talk
Let
about,
me take you down, should, let me take you down,
should we,
downtown.
Should we ask the question after we talk about the movie, or is it a good one to ask before? Is it a good scene setter?
No, you're right. Let's ask afterwards.
Okay.
So the only other one we have on this particular thing is from your erstwhile brother.
Oh, dear.
And he asked, if Spader was an animal, what would he be?
Now, a real animal, not like a fictional goblin or a like a leprechaun.
No, not like a fictional
goblin. I feel like he would be a leprechaun.
A leprechaun?
Yeah, he's like stolen somebody's body.
Okay.
Like an evil leprechaun, but okay, an actual animal. I feel like maybe like a female praying mantis.
You think he would be a female praying mantis?
Yeah, I think he would bite the head off his lover when he was done with him.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or isn't there like an animal that like it fucks something and then absorbs them into it? Like it literally, yes, there's some animal, like I think it's a fish, and it fucks the male, I think, and then the male just like withers and dies. And it gets absorbed into the female.
Okay.
That would be Spader. Not the withering bit, like the absorbent.
No, the absorbent
yeah.
one.
Yeah, that would be the Spader animal.
Yeah, I think you've picked two winners there. I couldn't. I mean, I was going to go with like a trouser ferret or something, or a weasel or something. maybe.
He probably would be like a. He'd be like the trouser ferret's revenge. Right. Do you know what I mean? Like he would be the trouser ferret that went bad.
Right.
You know.
He's like, by the way, the
hiding out in the like the roof of the railway station, having like bitten the knob off its last owner.
Yeah. By some railway siding pornography.
Yeah. Yes.
That they're always.
Which he uses for a duvet.
Which he uses.
Yeah.
And a wank rag.
Yeah. An ex trouser ferret who sleeps under wet pornography.
Who is
thrown away, wet, discarded pornography.
Having bitten the knob off his previous owner.
Yeah. And he scrawls like poems about wet, discarded pornography and being a trouser ferret into like the gents' doors of the railway station where he sleeps. So every time anybody closes the door and like sits down the loo, looks up and there's a poem that makes them question their whole life. But also feel a bit horny.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've won that.
There we go.
I think we've won that one. We have a few more comments, I think, but I don't think we have any other questions.
All right. Well, we'll ask.
But I tell you what, I'm going to look at the end because I want to get to the.
Oh yeah, we'll do the balance.
So, this week's pick is on Amazon Prime. And if you want to stream it, obviously click through the Amazon banner on the website to help us out.
Does that work?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
You mean get cut the Prime?
Yeah. If you go through and watch it, like I think it still gives us a couple of cents.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
I don't know, maybe it doesn't. Who gives a fuck? Just do it anyway and buy things while you're at it.
Yeah.
You lazy, flabby, discarded snot rags people. I have no idea.
Just gonna let you just keep going until that one comes to a halt. Sometimes I jump in, but on that one,
because I'm not quite as you are on the ball tonight though with your Spader
metaphors, yeah. Similes.
Sure, let's go with those two. And so anyway, this week on Amazon Prime, we found the movie Bad Influence. Let me take you down. I'm gonna take you down, down.
This song was in the movie, right?
It was, while they were robbing convenience.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Bad Influence, it's from 1990. And
it almost exactly, if I'm thinking about it, it's there's so much 80s about it,
yeah,
and there's also so much 90s about it as well. It's exactly in the middle of those two golden ages of
it's directed by Curtis Hanson.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know he started off that long ago.
Written by David Coop.
Who's also a big lad in the writing game, right?
Yeah. It stars Rob Lowe and James Spader with Lisa Zane. Now, I haven't looked into it, but I'm going to assume she's Billy Zane's sister. Just assuming it.
Okay.
I don't know. It also has appearances by David Duchovny in it.
Where's Duchovny?
Duchovny was one of like the sleazeballs at the party, apparently, in the nightclub. According to the end credits, he was nightclub patron too or something.
Wow, I totally missed Duchovny.
Yeah, I didn't see him either. And then it has a diner favourite, simply because of his name, Grand L. Bush, as the nightclub barman.
Oh, yeah, okay. I recognized him.
And Grandel Bush, people who don't know, is from Die Hard.
Yeah.
He is the second of the two Johnsons.
Yeah, that's right. I knew I recognized him. Okay.
Because when Elder Johnson, played by Robert Davi, is going on about Vietnam, he says something like, "I was 8 during Vietnam, you idiot."
No, he says, "I was..." Oh, I can't remember the line now. Just like now, May Slick.
And he goes, "I was 8 in that," or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I can't remember.
So, Curtis Hanson, he is famous for...
LA Confidential.
LA Confidential, 8 Mile, Boys. The Wonder Boys in Her Shoes, stuff like that. The only one I like of any of those is Wonder Boys.
You don't like LA Confidential? What's not to like about LA Confidential?
Well, it's not that I don't like it, it's just that I've never gone back and rewatched it, so I just assume it wasn't my thing.
Fair enough. I liked it a lot. Guy Pearce and Russell Crowe?
No.
Alright, fair enough.
Russell Crowe is only interesting if he's overweight and schlubby.
That's what he is in LA Confidential. He's a schlubby, improbably strong.
Well, I need to go rewatch it, because when I watched it as a younger guy, I probably didn't.
Good.
So, this is why Coep gets the bad reputation that he gets. He writes Mission Impossible, which is fine, and he writes Jurassic Park. That's where he obviously made his bones. And wrote Spider-Man. But then, he writes War of the Worlds. He wrote the most recent Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit, which is awful.
Right.
He wrote
that was terrible.
Inferno, which is the sequel to Gods and Aliens, or no, Devils and Angels, or whatever that.
Tom Hanks, the
Da Vinci Code.
But that's like, you know, that's obviously going to be awful.
Right. He writes Angels and Demons as well. He writes, Indiana Jones and the Crystal Doodad.
Oh, wow, that was a classic.
Yeah, so Coep.
So he starts off strong.
He starts off with Bad Influence. I don't know if that's his first one, but it's certainly an earlier one. And then he, you know, Jurassic Park, that's a winner.
But it's clearly like a script, and I don't know what Curtis Hanson had done before it. But...
Right. So that's where we're coming from. And he certainly, like...
It's difficult to know how it gets made, right? I mean...
Right.
Like, it's a script, and it's...
It is a script. Like, I will tell you it is a script.
It's not a bad script, and it's not badly directed, and I get why they thought that...
No, I'm sorry.
Rob Lowe and James Spader thing might work.
The third act falls apart
like
a badly mixed flan. Yeah. Like, it just... Everything it sets up in Act 1 and 2, it doesn't in any way pay off.
That's true, it doesn't.
And that's its biggest... Like, the biggest...
Well, James Spader becomes a different human being. It's like his whole character...
Well, he becomes a different human in each act.
Yeah, that's true.
So, before we go into it, though...
Shall I do my paid-ated...
Do we watch it?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Do we watch it?
I don't know. I honestly don't know how I feel about this one. Oh, yeah, lovely. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you. Magic.
Excellent. Thank you.
See, I told you, 2 plates.
Look at the size of your helmet.
Oh, my
actually.
Word.
Right?
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Look at that. Perfection.
Wow, that's magic.
You want more hot water or tea?
Oh, no, I'll be fine. Thanks, man. Thank you. Wow, this is... So it's just like, wow.
It's a whole bloody omelette.
It's more like an omelette pancake.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. More omelette for me, says Jim Wallace. The review of the Good Stuff Diner is that it's good stuff. I just hope you like the taste of it. So, yes, should people watch it? You're on the fence. I'm going to say...
I mean, probably not, right?
I'm going to say no. I really am. And it does sadden me that 2 weeks into Sleazy Spader Springtime, the sleazening, I feel sad to say, but this is a second one that I can't hand on heart wholeheartedly endorse. Doesn't mean I didn't enjoy it, and doesn't mean there aren't things in it, but I can't say that people should listen to this and then rush out and watch it.
It's sort of a classic... 1 a.m. you know, ITV kind of a movie. You know, I mean, you'd catch one night and it would possibly hold your attention for a few hours, and you'd go to bed, you'd think, I shouldn't have gone to bed so late, I'm going to regret this in the morning. And then that would, you know what I mean?
That is exactly the movie it is. No, it definitely is.
It holds your attention just enough to the end, but without, at the end of it, you're like, well, that...
That was a lot of old shash.
I mean, not that it was shash exactly, but just
why did I shash my way through that? Shash. It is. Brilliant. It is a one-way ticket to Shashville.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
An enjoyable ticket. Along the way, you might see some boobs, but, like, that's about it.
It's not very. It's not exactly top quality boob action, though, is it? No, honest.
No, but it does start with. It does start with the two hallmarks of sleazy quality, which is boobs and saxophone.
It did start. There was a lot of saxophone.
Yeah, I almost assumed and, that somehow the ghost of Rob Lowe's character in Sonoma's Fire had sleazily ingested the saxophone, and therefore every time Rob Lowe walked around in this movie, I presume passing wind, he passed saxophone wind. That's what I was assuming.
Oh, it's tomato juice. So
I'm saying that he passes saxophone wind as he walks around, being devilish, I guess he is. I don't know.
No.
Anyway, do your painter did,
right,
explaining the plot in a not very good way.
Why do you interrupt me? Ceaselessly. All right. So, movie starts off with Rob Lowe leaving a woman and not wanting to leave any trace of him behind. It's like taking all the photos and all of his clothes and whatnot. So already, we're on to the fact that he's a bad'un.
What, just suspicious?
Cut to James Spader is harried, wimpy, downtrodden guy, working in a high-pressure job with a high-pressure fiancé.
A job which is never fully clearly explained.
No, not really. He's some kind of financial analyst, I guess.
He's a financial data analyst, but it's in...
Oh, by the way, his office changes halfway through the movie. At the beginning of the movie, he's in an office.
Yeah.
And then the second half of the movie, he's working in a totally different place.
In the bullpen, but then he goes back to the office.
He does go back to the office, that's true, yeah. Anyway. Oh God, I got distracted, like, hardly... So, sorry. Rob Lowe, shifty, shifty bastard. James Spader, downtrodden wimp. They meet in a bar when Rob Lowe unconvincingly threatens somebody who is beating up Spader. Spader then runs into Lowe on a pier a bit later on.
Can I interrupt?
Sure.
Spader is in the bar because, and I'm only bringing this up because it does actually pertain to stuff that happens later.
No, I'm going to get to that.
He's in the bar because he is being dicked around by a colleague at work who has hidden a important file on the server. Right. Hang on a second.
All right.
And also, like, he's worried about his fiance and various other things.
That's what I'm saying. I've covered all that. He's a downtrodden guy at work and with his fiance. He bumps into Lowe in this bar while Lowe defends him from being beaten up.
Right.
Spader runs into Lowe later. They get to talking. And Rob Lowe finds this guy's problems and his inability to solve his problems, which are namely, he's being pushed around at work by this guy and he's getting married to somebody when he doesn't really want to get married. And he finds these problems a little bit intriguing because it gives him a chance to flex his nihilistic, I don't give a shit, I'll do anything to get what I want muscles in a new and interesting way. And so he removes Spader from his marriage. He removes Spader's rival from the company, essentially. But in doing so, does it in a way that leads Spader to believe, hey, look, this bloke is a bit of a psycho. I'm in a bit deep here. And so it proves. So it, and then it kind of devolves into sort of Fatal Attraction,
How do I get this guy out of my life?
How do I get this guy out of my life kind of territory.
Right.
And it becomes apparent that Rob Lowe's a total psychopath.
Right.
Other plot details happen, but that is the broad sweep.
Sure. So yeah, it's sort of yuppie era. I'm assuming LA, although that's never...
No, it's LA because they dump the body in La Brea Tar Pits, don't they?
I don't know. I thought that, but then... later on, when you see the body being pulled out, he actually dumped the body in like the dirty lake that's opposite his office.
No, because they walked past the La Brea Tar Pits thing, which is, I think, in the middle of downtown LA.
Oh, okay. And Spader is doing a job that, like we say, isn't really defined.
Working for Q at Star Trek Next Generation.
And he's, and he's a in a relationship that's not really clearly defined. And he has a older stoner brother played by Spader's real-life best friend.
Oh, really?
Christian Clemenson. Mm-hmm. Which is, what's funny about that is Christian Clemenson normally plays the character Spader is playing at the beginning of the movie. In other words, the whiny, put-upon, nerdy character.
It's the one bit of the movie that I thought nearly worked is the brotherly redemption arc bit.
Really?
That bit was quite, well, it was, at least it was like satisfying, right, to watch his brother actually step up and help him out and do genuinely useful things.
Right.
That part was satisfying. Although I agree with you, it was set up that way and didn't really pay off as well as it should have done. But at least it was an interesting thing.
So, initially, it's not that Rob Lowe initially interferes in his life.
No.
He inspires Spader to have a little bit of gumption and belief in himself to get his work situation back on track.
Yeah.
Because him and this other chap who is screwing him over are both in line for some promotion. And Spader really wants the job, but is being screwed over, so he like steps up to the plate, which is fine. Then there's this bit where they go out on this like night where, well, they, no, the wild night happens later, but they go out on one night and they pick up this Rob Lowe pretending to be fucking German or Italian or something. They pick up this like arty boho chic chick at some nightclub that it is indicated Rob Lowe kind of knows.
No. Pongo.
Because they're all kind of like,
it seems to be some kind of scene, right? That's the thing. There's some scene.
Oh yeah, no, so there's the whole thing about the newspaper with like the weird stuff circled in the newspaper, and that's somehow how they track him down later on, which I did not understand at all. That seemed particularly weak, but I think essentially it was the weird personals in the back pages of like the local newspaper, you know, like dwarf Sikhs, two-headed love maiden or whatever, with horse fetish and, you know, penchant for trilby hats, are really the passwords or gatekeeping things for getting into weird clubs.
Yes, you're pretty much your standard Hollywood sex party. In other words, and I don't mean like, because actually I'm assuming actual standard Hollywood sex party, a dens of iniquity from presumably like few escape with their souls intact,
right?
But these are like Hollywood depictions of sex parties, which means like, oh, it's a bit dangerous and lots of people are wearing leather and waving things around. And
well, yeah. No, but this is the point. It's like, it wasn't like strictly a sex party. It was,
no, but it was topless women sitting around.
It seemed
like
to be the combination of
stuff.
The combination of extraordinarily wealthy,
yeah,
bad, I don't know, it's hip hop, but like bad dance music, in a restaurant stroke nightclub setting, because there's two different ones, and one is in a nightclub setting and one is definitely in like a restaurant setting,
right?
While presumably at the time controversial art and performance art in quotations takes place in a central area.
Well, presumably the whole thing is meant as a kind of, okay, so this is my, I think what it's supposed to be, a lot of anyway, is a kind of a half-assed satire
of, like,
of the 80s,
yeah,
right? That's what it's supposed to be.
It's a lot of like wanky art and a lot of people like swanning about, and Rob Lowe is essentially, his character is aware of the pretensions and idiocies of this, but he's also a part of this scene and willing to manipulate it for his own ends.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah.
These scenes are the sort of thing that Spader, who we already know from the beginning, is like spending his money on stuff, like idle stuff, like video cameras and TVs and home furnishings and things like that.
Right.
And in other words, like, his brother's like, oh my goodness, I'm going to come back here and you're going to have like a cappuccino machine or whatever. Like, he is the height of just, yeah, he is just the height of purchasing just any old bollocks just to try and feel whole.
It is a kind of dated 80s satire, it feels like to me. Like, a lot of it is about, like, you know, Spader's in, like, you know, he's a trader, and
but I just
Rob
mean,
Lowe is, like, you know, the 80s idol. Like, you can see what they were going for.
Right.
Maybe it would have been more relevant in, like, 1990 or in 89, which is presumably when it was actually made.
No, I just think, like, I think that there's definitely an aspect to it where, yeah, like, obviously, Rob Lowe represents the stuff initially that Spader is like looking for. And it's not just about like sacking up and being more ballsy at work. It's also about he has the gateway to the parties that Spader would want to attend and blah 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 blah. So,
yeah,
and it's definitely like there's a line later on that Christian Clemenson says, which isn't a particularly good line, but it's essentially like, if you get into bed with the devil, you're going to end up having sex, right?
Right, that's not a good line.
Right, he says, if you get in bed with the devil, you're going to end up having to fuck, is what he says. This is the line. And it, there is that kind of Faustian thing of, you know, the devil will show you riches, but all the riches come at a price.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really fulfill that, because essentially what happens is the work stuff, at the very least, is all down to Spader. Like, yes, Rob Lowe beats up his rival later on, but he didn't need to beat him up because Spader was already succeeding at work through his own means. And then the only thing that Rob Lowe does is gets him out of his engagement. And the way he gets him out of his engagement is like truly horrible for that family and that woman.
How is it that's never mentioned again? How is it that people are beating his door down? Do you know what I mean? Like, nobody from that family comes by after Rob Lowe's plan is to pretend to be French and then take along a sex video of Spader and show it to in front of the bride's family
on the
parents' anniversary.
On the parents' anniversary.
It is quite, I mean, it is one of those weird things where it's quite kind of daring and satisfying when you realise what he's done. When he's
See, I didn't. I watched it and I was like horrified.
No, I was horrified. Like,
it's funny.
I suppose so, yeah.
But what was horrifying about it is that Hansen plays it for laughs. Like, at one point, like, the fiance is like screaming, like, turn it off. And the mother hits the fast forward button. And so there's this like ludicrous Benny Hill.
Blackly comic, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. That's the idea. So anyway, yeah, Spader meets this other woman when they're out on the night, out on the town with Rob Lowe. Rob Lowe convinces her to have sex with him, even though like Spader's passed out on the couch. Rob Lowe then videotapes it with Spader's new video camera. And again, uses that to like dissolve his engagement with this woman who we don't really know and don't really care about. And I guess that's why we don't really know her, other than the one scene she appears in.
Right.
Oh, well, no, the one scene she appears in, she seems to be more fixated on calendar and social engagements and appearances than she does any true love for Spader.
Yes.
I guess that's why we're meant to not really care that she, like, is embarrassed and utterly hurt in front of her entire family.
Yeah, it is pretty bad. It's a pretty humiliating and awful. But it's played at that point in the movie. There's a little bit of wish fulfillment about it in terms of, you know, that Spader really wants out of this engagement.
Do we? Only because he tells him. Like, I never sense it on him. I never feel it on him in the way
that... Well, I think there's that scene between him in the office. He's got, like, terrible ulcers and...
Oh, he starts to have an anxiety attack, right, while she's
just,
there.
She says, oh, you're only having anxiety because you're so successful. Just keep being successful and don't worry about it. I'm like, you
have a beef. Yeah.
Terrible advice.
So, yeah, it's all a bit weird because then the next thing that happens is they go out on another wild night, and on this wild night, like...
Yeah, that's after the tape.
On that wild night, they get horrendously drunk, do a whole bunch of drugs.
Yeah.
Spader puts on a rabbit mask and is bouncing around making squeaky noises. Yeah. Meanwhile, Roblo holds up a burger joint. And then, when Spader, in his drugged up, mad, fueled, let's rob another place thing, says, oh, let's go over to the 7-Eleven, this corporate place. Roblo goes, no, they'll have cameras. Let's find like another independent shop. So it's even like more hideous because they're ripping off like mom and pop places rather than anywhere else. So they knock over another place. Then you see them driving around in Peterson's, his work enemies.
Neighborhood?
Work rival is the word I was looking for. Neighborhood. And then the next thing we know, Spader wakes up with blood all over his hands.
Right, but like, I mean, I know, like...
And Peterson doesn't come in the office.
But like, look, stuff happens in the movie, right? And none of it's really terribly exciting, is it? That's the main problem here. It's not terribly sleazy. Spader never really gets his sleazy. The big problem in the movie is it is all supposed to be, it's all based on the fact that, isn't it interesting how Roblo, we've turned him into a dead-eyed psychopath. But the problem is, dead-eyed psychopaths in movies, right, what they need to have is charm. So Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs or whatever, Robert Mitchum in...
yeah, I know what you mean.
Night of the Hunter. Yeah, they need to be charming while being dead-eyed psychopaths. Right. But the problem is, if you say to Rob Lowe, hey, we need you to be a dead-eyed psychopath, he can give you that, no problem. But then his charm is all gone. There's no, like, he can't do that, like, wink, 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 I'm enjoying this, come on, we're enjoying this together thing.
Right.
Because he just looks like... he's just a dead-eyed psychopath. He's not charming or funny in it at all. And you can't have a guy who persuades a bright, you know, albeit naive analyst short of life experience into throwing his entire life away and embarking on a mad sex and drug-fueled spree of illegality. If you're a dull, if you're a dull person, this is not going to happen. Nobody's going to, you know what, this guy seems dull and faintly dangerous. I think I'll join him on his own. You know what I mean? There's no, without that, there's no connection at all between Spader and Lowe, and so it doesn't work. None of it works. If I was thinking, maybe it's one of those things like Robert De Niro and Bill Murray in Mad Dog and Glory, where they swap the parts, and in doing so, they ended up doing something they wouldn't normally do,
right,
and stretching themselves and coming up with a really cool little film.
Yeah.
But in this one, it's like, I can see Spader playing the Rob Lowe part, no problem. That I can see, right? But I can't see Rob Lowe playing the Spader role. Like, I can't see them swapping. Like, Lowe's just miscast in either role.
Right.
You need somebody like... like, maybe Downey Jr. at that age could have done the Rob Lowe part. Maybe could have done the Spader part. But really, there's very few people that can carry off that part. And it's people who have natural charisma, even when they're telling you to, like, do evil, horrible things.
But the problem is I think that Spader's...
Lowe's charisma is not about, like, magnetism. It's about, like, there's something, like,
no, except
good
that
and
I don't
friendly
know,
about
except
him.
That I don't know that's the point. I think that as the audience, we're meant to... I think it's harder than that, because I think as the audience we're sort of meant to loathe him, because he is meant to epitomise the idle, yuppie, independently wealthy drifter who doesn't do fuck all yet seemingly is invited to all the best parties, which no matter how charming he is already makes him a loathsome.
Okay. So then, fair enough. Let's say they go. Then in which case they need somebody heavy.
Like, there's no backstory to him. Like, we don't know anything about him.
No, he's paper thin. As a, like, and I don't just mean like as a character. I mean,
Just on the screen, he's barely bloody there, is it?
Right. Well, I actually kind of liked what Lowe was doing. The only bit that I started to dislike it was when he started to put on foreign accents. And I was like, Lowe, what are you doing?
He wasn't there.
But
Spader actually did the schlubby, you know, put upon schmoke really quite well. He did drunk really well.
But like the problem with Spader is that once he becomes the action hero who's got to get this guy out of his life, come hooker by crook, I'm not interested anymore.
Well, I say there isn't any. There's no journey for him. You know what I mean? He didn't take any kind of a journey for me, right. Anyway.
And then the ending is just...
It's such a damn piffle script.
Yeah.
I thought it was all going to be... He's either going to use his brother as a guinea pig, which I think he sort of did, but then it totally didn't work. Or he's going to he's going to think like Lowe, because he's an analyst, he's going to think like Lowe, and that's how he'll get Lowe, but he didn't do that. What he did end up doing, which was quite clever, is I'm not going to be think like Lowe, because like he's been at it too long. I'm going to think like me.
Right.
And I'm going to do what Lowe expects me to do, which is chicken out and run away when the going gets tough. Right? And in doing so, I'll lead him into a trap. But unfortunately, it was like the world's lamest
trap.
Right. You know, and as soon as you walked into Spader's house and there was a video camera there, you go, oh, I wonder if that'll become an important plot point. And so,
right.
In fact, they just like beat the video camera had like more of a role in the movie than Lowe did, frankly. It was like, let's wheel out the video camera again, do you know what I mean, for more plot points.
Right.
But it might as well be called The Adventures of James Spader's Video Camera, which, by the way, would have been a more interesting movie.
Yeah.
God knows what that would have been. You know what I mean?
But no, I... Like,
oh, it's all dark. What's it? Oh, God.
The thing that's frustrating about the movie is I think that there's definitely something in there. You know what I mean? Like, there's something in there.
There is, but I think they took it as far as they were going to go.
Where it gets really lost for me, is that after the night happens, and he has this wild night, and he's meant to have beaten up Peterson and da-da-da-da. He then turns around to like Lowe at a certain point, and I forget what the breaking point is. Is it him beating up Peterson?
Him beating up Peterson.
But he turns around and says to Lowe, like, all right, get out of my life. I don't want you in my life. Da 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 da. Right? So then at that point, Lowe steals all his stuff. Right. Like, just steals all of it. Right?
Right.
And even at that point, Spader's just like, fine, whatever, it's just stuff. Like, I'm going to get my promotion, I'm going to do da-da-da-da-da, and I'm going to have money, and I'll just buy more stuff. This stuff was never me anyway, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's kind of interesting. Like, let's explore that bit, because, like, this you are not your stuff kind of moment in the film. And they don't explore that at all. It's just thrown away. Then Rob Lowe comes back and it's like, we're not even. I gave you everything. I gave you your whole life and blah, 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 blah. And he ends up killing the girl on camera that Spader took home that night and bonked on camera. Kills her, leaves her in Spader's apartment behind a locked door.
A nailed door. Which is, again...
Doesn't make any sense.
Why does that matter?
Well, it doesn't make any sense, because if he's meant to be framing Spader for the thing, like, how does that work? Like, all Spader has to do is not go in that room.
Yes, I agree.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then Rob Lowe and I'm like, wait a minute, but you filmed it, right? And, like, at the point that Spader sees him laughing on the camera, why Spader didn't stop the tape, grab the tape and run for police, I don't know. But he hangs around long enough for Rob Lowe to keep me laughing. He bursts down the door of the where the dead girl is, vomits all over the place, mistake number three. And then by the time he comes back in, having vomited all over the place, Rob Lowe is now on the stairs, goes, I covered all my angles. And I'm like, well, I've thought about at least three angles you didn't cover. He then takes the tape cassette, by which point you're like, oh, and he walks out the door, right? So the whole thing is frustrating, but then again it sets up an interesting thing. Like, it sets up an interesting thing, which is, like, how far does Spader now go to keep his present life ticking over? Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, does Spader hide and bury the body, or does he call the police and goes, but Rob Lowe, and they go, well, we don't have any record of him, Rob Lowe, sorry mate, and he gets thrown in the slammer and takes his chances in the courts or whatever. So there's an interesting dilemma there for him. But instead of that, again, playing out in any kind of interesting way with nervous whatever, Spader just immediately goes, right, I'll get my brother over here, we'll wrap her up in my curtains, which, again, complete idiocy, right? Instead of putting her, like, instead of buying
and her, then they just, like, carry her out of the apartment.
Carry her out of the apartment.
I'm going, what, does nobody live in your apartment building?
No, but then they're in the elevator, and before they even go down, his brother goes, what if someone gets on? And then they're like, and I'm like, none of this was thought out, which is completely unbelievable, because I understand acting in panic, but even so, you still have 5 minutes to go, well, I'm not going to make these mistakes that I've seen in films I've read in books. Covered
well,
in blood.
Why don't we wait until much later before we do that?
Then they bury the body in the tar pits across the road from Spader's office. Again, in no way deflecting. So this is killed in his apartment, where there's evidence, wrapped in his curtain, where there's evidence, and buried in the river across the road from his
also,
office.
Also, that whole big reveal after this, which is when Spader's in his office, and Spader's in the office, and there's a golf club behind the door,
right?
Which is because the girl was met with the golf club, and Spader calls back and goes, "He followed us. He must have followed us. He followed us and picked it up." Like, it's a golf club. It could be any golf club,
right?
Like, he just put a golf club,
but they could. It isn't, though, because then he looks outside, sees an ambulance, runs downstairs to find the body of the girl being removed from the tar pits and Rob Lowe, like, waving across the road, right? So, at this point, right, they drop the ball on interesting point number one. They drop the ball on interesting point number two. So now you think, oh, okay, so the rest of the film is Spader going to be, like, trying to prove his innocence, because all this evidence comes up, and I presume that at some point the police are going to come knocking on his door because of all this stuff.
Right.
That's not what happens either. Like, then they have a plan, like, to how to get Rob Lowe, which involves his fingerprints. So there's this whole long, cumbersome scene where his brother...
Which never happens, right? Because he probably never comes happens. Back. His brother tucks the bottle inside his jacket, and I was carefully watching this for reasons, which tells you how exciting the movie was.
Which, by the way, putting it in your jacket would rub off all the fingerprints, but okay.
Right. But all the way through his brother coming back and being chased by Rob Lowe and, like, on the, you know, clinging onto the fire escape and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Presumably the bottle's still in the jacket because he hasn't, like, gone anywhere and taken it out.
No, we never see him remove
it. We never see the bottle again.
No. So they drop the ball on that bit, right? So then it becomes this, like, chase to the end of the movie, which is utterly unsatisfying because it's all a bit pish. Because first of all, it's a trap that we've all seen a million times, which is, oh, by the way, you're being recorded, right? And all they got him saying was, like, oh, I killed her. But, like, that would hold up in court, like, I don't know. I can't think of what you wouldn't hold up in court. A giant picture of John Lovitz on a...
trampoline?
On a trampoline.
Made of human skin.
See, you're winning this.
Okay, sorry.
So, yeah, by the time he sort of dragged its sort of lazy screenwriting carcass to the end of the film, I was just like...
It was pretty bad.
And then they get rid of Rob Lowe, and then they call the police, and I'm just like, we don't know if you've got away with it or not. Like, get rid of Rob Lowe, and then have, I don't know, 6 months later, or 2 weeks later, or whatever, and then if you haven't, like, if the pressure is becoming too much or whatever, maybe you call the police. But you don't, like, get rid of Rob Lowe and then call the police and go, I'm just going to tell them what happened. Like, what? What are you going to tell them? That you went out, robbed a bunch of stuff, got high, a guy killed a thing? Like, I'm already bored.
It barely had an interesting premise, barely, because it was just a kind of a... It was a cross between, you know, Frenchman comes into the middle of American family and fucks everybody and makes the, you know, the bourgeois Americans think twice about their petty whatever, their petty concerns. And, or,
is that a movie?
Yeah, that's always like, it's always a French bloke turning up going, oh, well, you know, I will shag the mother, I will shag the daughter, I will shag the, you know what I mean, I will shag the maid.
Right.
look at your bourgeois concerns and how little they mean to me. You know, that kind of a thing.
Is that a
movie? Yeah, that's basically Down Out in Beverly Hills. I mean, instead of like a fat tramp, it's a Frenchman. But there's lots of films in the 90s where that happens, trust me.
Okay. And you've watched way more French movies than I have. Probably.
Yeah, watch it. And then
you went through that whole period.
I did go a bit mad in the French ones. Mad / pretentious.
Yeah.
Is there a difference?
And if people had just saw that
hand
gesture,
they would have known the tree. And it's also fight and attraction. Like you're involved in something that's initially exciting, but the forbidden nature of the excitement eventually comes back to bite you.
It's Cape Fear.
Blah blah blah. Cape Fear, right? It's Cape Fear. Like innocent man gets framed for something that he didn't do, even though he sort of thinks maybe he did do it. Like that whole thing. But none of it ever amounts to anything because all it's really saying is the 80s. People were a bit, you know, greedy and selfish, weren't they? You're going, it's the 90s, Curtis. We're already there, mate. You know?
Yeah.
It didn't really... And it might have worked if they'd gotten somebody interesting to play the Rob Lowe character.
See, I liked Rob Lowe the way he played it, because I'm used to Rob Lowe in the 80s being a bit of a tit.
But he wasn't good, though. He wasn't good enough.
No, but he was at least... Okay. He was at least doing something, meaning he wasn't just being Rob Lowe.
Well, yeah, he could. If he had just been Rob Lowe, like been charming and affable while at the same time like advocating murder and, you know, robbery and whatever, that would have been quite a disturbing. He'd been like, hey, it's fine, we're just, you know, holding up a gun. You know, this is weird, there's something wrong with this guy.
Right.
But instead he's like, I have slick back hair and dead eyes and this is what you need to do to get ahead in this world. Kind of like, what are you bothering with Spader for anyway? I mean, I get that he's bored and everything, and they just sit around in their sex parties watching what I can only assume is, in my opinion, I think James Spader's directorial debut comes in this movie, because I think, you know, in the sex party, there's the half-nude people wearing leather waving around fluorescent lights.
Yeah, they're not half-nude, they're all clothed, but yeah.
No, I mean, they're, you know...
The men are naked, shirtless.
That, I think, is James Spader, that's him. They went, what can we do here? And Spader's like, I've got some friends.
Let me
bring my Thursday night theatre treat.
They do choreographed performance art that's a bit twatty and pretentious.
Yeah. But at the same time, deep. Like, where did they get the fluorescent lights on? This is all kinds of questions I had over the fluorescent lights set show, which appeared to be boring, weird and inexplicable.
Right, well, but this was my thing.
So why would this be exclusive? I don't understand. This would get booed off the stage anyway. How much are they charging you for this?
Well, I think that...
But then I think that's the point, isn't it? Like, the art gallery and this show, it's all supposed to be like, this is just empty...
Pretentious drivel.
No. You're trying to be, like...
Cultured.
Not offensive. Not offensive, but, like...
Edgy.
Yeah. Like, edgy. Confrontational, like empty confrontation. You know what I mean? Like, oh, we're challenging. Look at us being challenging. We're challenging things.
Right, it's modern art.
Yeah. No, because like some modern art can be good. Like some things need to be challenged. But when all they're doing is going, look at us, we're challenging. We're challenging things. And they don't know what they're challenging or why they're challenging or what this even this fucking thing is that they're doing, except that nobody's done it before and it's a bit weird. Like maybe if he wears lederhosen, that'll be more challenging.
But to me, you see, that's 90% of art. It took him
like a week. Well, that's a whole other conversation, right? But that's a lot of modern art is like deliberately, you know, confrontational with the rest of it.
Right.
But that's, you know, the whole theory of shaking people out of their whatever.
The
art that they look at is not designed to shake people out of their. It's designed to repel.
No, like, but it's also...
Most of the stuff that, like, modern art, you know, the Damien Hirst and the Tracy Emin, that's designed to make you get angry and talk about what really is art and what's it all about and what does this even mean anyway and that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
But this is just... It's meant to repel and that's it. It only exists for people who can go, oh, well, I get it. This is for me. I like this. You know, so you can feel exclusive, but that's its only function. So it's not...
I think we're saying the same thing. I was going to say that it's kind of designed...
You're saying that's 90% of art, and I'm taking issue with that.
Well, no, it's 90% of art now.
No, I'm taking issue with that as well. I'll take issue with as many things as I want.
Okay, no, I was stating, or I was trying to state, or about to state, that it's the kind of art...
Welcome to modern art.
Yeah, it was the kind of
art... It's only a matter of time, on the sleazy spade of springtime, that we started debating the function of modern art.
No, I'm not debating any functions, but... My feeling is that it's the kind of art that is created by a society that goes, well, we have to have are in our society, because that's like part of a society, but they don't quite kind of like, they just, it's a function of
I think we're all right. Right?
I would like some more water.
Thank you.
It's a function of, we'd like to look cultured, but we don't really, A, have any culture, or B, understand kind of what culture is. So let's just have some people being weird. And that,
well, yeah, I mean, it's meant to be exclusive. It's meant to be like, well, you wouldn't see this anywhere else. And the reason we see it anywhere else is because it's like garbage.
But it's also in almost every single like 80s, early 90s film.
Yeah, it is
film.
That thing, isn't it?
And it's like the seedy underbelly.
It's been in that
like,
sex club.
What
was the sex club?
None of them were sex clubs. There was no,
no. What was the movie? Single White Female. In Single White Female, when Jason Lee goes, if this band or the fluorescent light twirling
were in that, they
would have been a bit like, oh yeah, okay,
yeah,
the fluorescent light twirling Lederhosen Brothers.
The point is that all of these, thank you. And there's also one, like, there's a terrible, terrible nightclub in, like, Basic Instinct. That, like, they're all over the place. Like, the 80s and 90s were awash with terrible nightclubs and movies. And V-neck sweaters without shirts. But I also feel like the purpose of them is almost to go, you know, this is the life that everyone else is living but you. You know, and I watch that and I go, that wasn't my experience. Or like, I don't even believe the stuff like that goes on. And if it does go on, it's really boring.
Well, it's difficult to say, because in this movie, it's not supposed to be aspirational. You're not supposed to want to go to these clubs and do these things.
I think Spader wants to.
No. Spader wants to be. Spader enjoys being there because it is different and new, and it's weird, and people don't seem to give a shit about. Why don't they give a shit about the rules? People don't seem to care. But like, for the viewer, like, the reason people have massive apartments that they could never really afford in movies is because people watching them like secretly want to be living in that apartment, living that life there. But I don't think anybody watching this film is going to want to go to these clubs, sit there and watch that band, or, you know, have a drink with like Rob Lowe's character. Like, it's meant to be like a repellent, alienating, awful place. And the problem is that it's very difficult for Spader, or rather for the audience surrogate, kind of Spader as us, to, like, the things that he's doing are like transgressive and weird, but they're not exciting. Like you say, like with they hold up like mom and pop stores, and it just comes across as cruel.
Right.
And the sex clubs or whatever the fuck they are come across as alienating. And the, you know, Rob Lowe isn't like charming or funny or witty. He's just a black-eyed psychopath.
Right.
So it's like, yes, these things are happening, and you've arranged them in an order that it constitutes a movie. But it's not a movie that I like. And I get that you don't have to like enjoy watching movies. Like, you can be like challenged by whatever. But if you're making a dumb thriller starring Rob Lowe and James Spader then have some fucking fun with it.
You can turn
the tables later, but it can't just be all a bleak margarine of like.
No, but this was my point. This was my point.
The black margarine of despair is essentially what we're being forced to eat.
Yeah, but I mean,
on you know, dry, stale crackers of nothingness.
True. My point was more that that the problem with that is that it was bad screenwriting. In other words, he goes, "Oh, I have an idea about what a thriller could be, but doesn't actually know how to write and engage."
No, I agree. That's a problem.
The After Movie Diner with John Gross will return right after this.
Hello, folks. This is a promo for a podcast called The Chris and Chris Show. I'm Chris with a C.
And I'm Chris with a K. The Chris and Chris Show is a movie podcast where myself and my colleague, Chris with a C,
hello,
discuss our thoughts on films from a wide variety of genres, all in our own inimitable style.
Here's what the masses are saying about the show. Funny, irreverent film analysis.
Reviews are great and spot on. Subscribe now.
The Chris and Chris Show is a slickly produced and fun podcast with two gents who have great chemistry.
They sound like two old men.
I don't read that one.
Oh, sorry. Keeps me intrigued and keeps me entertained.
There you have it. What are you waiting for? Head on over to www.wafo...
The audio equivalent of dysentery.
Stop reading the bad ones. What are you doing? Anyway, head on over to wafofm.com. That's wafufm.com to check out the show, or subscribe to The Chris and Chris Show on iTunes.
Or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ The Chris and Chris Show. That's Chris with a C, Chris with a K.
Lovely.
The Chris and Chris Show. The biggest load of I've ever heard.
What are you doing?
We'll do it live! F*** it! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live!
Hi, I'm Jay Mayo.
And I'm Marie...
Shut up!
I'm Marie Forster.
And we are co-hosts of Hold the Mayo podcast.
Hold the Mayo!
Hold the Mayo!
All right, give me ham on five, hold the Mayo.
We're two local comedians. And here on Hold the Mayo, we talk about all the different things that are going on in our daily lives.
Or in your case, your pathetic dating life.
Or in your case, your obsession with pizza.
Or in your case, you're Gatham for Statham.
Yeah, well, at least I'm not obsessed with Guy Fieri.
At least I'm a gang leader.
No, you're not. You're just always trying to overthrow invisible gangs.
No, I'm cool in the gang.
No, you're... Oh my God, you're the puns are the worst.
Mayonnaise, really? That stuff is for sandwiches.
Listen, you guys can find us all across the internet. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, and everywhere else that podcast can be found. You can also find us all across social media. We're on Twitter at Hold the Mayo Pod, Instagram at Hold the Mayo Podcast, and of course, we have a Facebook fan page, facebook.com/HoldTheMayoPodcast.
Don't forget, you can also find Jay crying on his couch every single night.
Thank you so much.
F***ing thing sucks!
And just end it with a fart.
Here's what some people are saying about the Projection Booth podcast.
This podcast takes no shortcut in producing outstanding content. How they haven't become more widely recognized is beyond me.
I love this show. Smart commentary, in-depth interviews, and great production.
It's obvious how serious these guys take their podcast and bring that next level of professionalism that anyone would be hard-pressed to match.
There are few things better in life than listening to people who are both passionate and knowledgeable about their subject matter. The Projection Booth, with their wide and wild range of film discussions, is one of those things. Simple as that.
The Projection Booth is the highest quality film podcast around. I love the focus on cult films, witty, informative banter, and amazing interviews. The Projection Booth is the best podcast out there, if you're a serious film lover.
The Projection Booth Podcast, with new episodes available every week at projectionboothpodcast.com.
You're listening to the sweet sounds of the After Movie Diner. Support us at patreon.com/AfterMovieDiner or I'll punch you in the teats. Rate and review us on iTunes, Earthling.
We've all agreed that we've watched thrillers, right, that fall apart in the last act.
Right.
But we still enjoy them because they've been a bit daft or whatever.
Right.
But this one's just relentlessly bleak and harsh and not nice.
Right, and then, because I think that then, maybe Hanson and Co-op are like, oh, you know, let's, you know, over-egg the 80s satirical pudding.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I agree.
I think
I agree, but then if you're going to do that, then you're right. Then you need that. No, I'm agreeing with you. You need the screenwriting in the third act to tie it all together and make it like an exciting joke.
And here is
just garbage. Here is an example
of why, like, David Co-op should be dragged down to the street and beaten with large undercooked strips
with spaders used dildos.
With spaders used dildos. He needs to be dragged.
That is the name of a punk band.
Yeah, it is.
James Spaders Used Dildos.
No, not James, just Spaders
Used Dildos.
Spaders Used Dildos. It's probably a shop on Hollywood and La Brea. If I was, anyway, this is a prime example of bad screenwriting. Halfway through the movie, a security guard, who we have no frame of reference for,
runs up
to Spader and goes, GG, Mr. Spader, thank you so much for helping me out with my accountancy exams or whatever it was, right? I got like an A+ or something like that. And you're like, whatever, that was weird. And then like in the last sequence, like running up to the end, where Spader like suddenly feels the need to defend himself, he goes to that guy, right? Tells him some improbable story and gets his security guard gun off him, right? If it's anyone other than you, kind of thing, and then he gives him his gun. And the thing about that is that...
You're like, right. He
get that out of the movie. Like, either establish... Also, because later on in the movie, he gives the gun back to his brother and doesn't even take it with him. So it's complete... I mean, first of all, scrap that whole idea then, because he doesn't even take it with him.
Well, he has to shoot low at the end, doesn't he?
right, but doesn't he give it back to his brother? So how does he get the gun back?
There's lots of things that don't make sense. I mean, listen, I agree with you.
Because his brother goes, what's that? Thing? Pulls up his T-shirt, and instead of lying to him, it goes, it's a gun-shaped dildo, which is what he
should. Well, they go in and they make a plan, don't they? And that's when he goes into the house and blah, blah, blah.
Right, but what I'm saying is...
Get the guy out.
No, but what happened was, is Co-op got to the end of the script.
It would be quite funny if he pulled the gun out and Spader's trousers dissolved for being too close to make Spader's knob.
I'm telling you exactly what happened.
Okay.
They filmed the end of the movie, right, where Spader shoots Rob Lowe.
Right.
And Hansen in the edit suite goes, wait a minute, where'd he get the gun? And Co-op goes, security guard. He helped the security guard out with his exams.
Well, I think this that the point of the scene with the security guard, when he runs over and says, "Oh, thank you so much," and his secretary is like likes him, is that they've got to establish some kind of baseline of him being likable before his life gets torn apart.
Another weird thing, right? This secretary that he isn't nice to at any point.
No.
Right? He's like a total, like, go do this, go do that for me, go get that, whatever. And she organises everything, like does his laundry and researches this and knows exactly when he's scheduled for that, blah, 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 blah. Halfway through the movie, she walks in and goes, I'm like, changing to another department. And he's like, why? And she's like, because you've totally changed. And I'm like, wait a minute, why don't we give a fuck about this woman's career trajectory? like, there was all this stuff that...
You're right, now that I think about it, you're right. That's bad screenwriting.
As a screenwriter, thought we needed to know.
Yeah.
And what we... Like, what I don't understand is he felt we needed to know the security guard's backstory and the secretary's backstory, but never once thought we needed to know Rob Lowe's backstory. That is what's ultimately confusing about.
Presumably,
and yet he slinks around these nightclubs.
Sometimes I see.
Like even but even later on in the movie, right, where the brother goes to the nightclub to get his bottle and stuff like that, Rob Lowe is having a conversation with like a whole other woman about something like seemingly important, but we never know who she is. We never know what it is, and in fact, the brother looks down and like sees a see-through purse or something with like her ID in it, and I'm thinking to myself, like, is all this relevant? Like, who was that person? Like, none of all the stuff that's meant to be important isn't written about, and like the security guard just so like Spader could have just gone into the back of a porn cinema like he does in Jack's Back and buy a gun.
That is how you that's how Spader gets a gun. Spader doesn't get a gun doing favors for security guards. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, the point being that for the second week in a row, it's been a bit of a disappointing Spader film. So, my question is, what do we do next? Because I feel like our random Spader choices are not working out. I want to see a Spader. I want to see a Crash. I want to see a sexualized videotape. I want to get me some. Why are we here talking about sleazy Spader Springtime? If it weren't for Crash and sexualized videotape, I feel like there would be no sleazy Spader Springtime. And when we're just fooling ourselves, not at least partially going down that route. I've always been curious to see Crash.
I don't want to see Crash, plus we've already covered it on the show.
Oh, you have already covered it?
We covered it on our Cronenberg special. John Cook talked about it.
No, you didn't do
Crash. Yeah, we did.
Crash.
John talked about it because he watched it specifically for the thing. And he said it was mostly dull.
All about sexualizing videotape, man. That's got handed me down there, so I don't know how I feel about that.
I would do sexualizing videotapes. I'm interested in two films that I have been recommended by my friends.
All right, okay.
One, of course...
Recommendations I will take.
...is The New Kids, which apparently is...
Oh,
really
yeah, that's
good.
The one we... Okay, fine.
Which you've got to come over and watch, because I have it on DVD.
Fine.
And the other one was called The Stick-Up.
Okay, what's The Stick-Up?
Like a kind of like crime caper with him in it, but it doesn't sound very sleazy. I think The New Kids, because I think he's meant to be weird in The New Kids, so I think we do New Kids, and then I think we come up with either we do sexualized videotapes for the fourth one, or we find like the weirdest, like bottom of the barrel, like mad Spader film we possibly can find and do that.
Okay, I'm down with that.
Like Supernova was that.
Yeah,
kind
but
of
that's
film.
What actually when I look back at them now, Supernova,
Jack's Back, The Watcher,
Dream Lover, and The Watcher were all like not good, but they were at least interesting and weird.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like this one wasn't very interesting and was just a bit, like, nasty. And the first one was just like quite watchable for the performance, but just like a bit of a misfire, really.
The sped up.
No, both the White Palace, whatever, and I think we've got the name of this.
Bad Influence.
But first of all, they're terrible titles, but they're both misfires. You know what I mean? They were both shooting for something,
right,
that they didn't hit. And in both of them, I would argue Spader was miscast. He was miscast in the first one because he's no way some.
No, I get it. Yeah, we went through that last year. Yeah.
And in this one, he's miscast because even though he actually plays put upon, bullied, you know, drunk guy really well, his transition into like action hero at the end. There's no journey because he's just playing James Spader.
So okay. Let's go now. So the sleazometer on this one.
Oh, it's very low.
It's very low, right? It's what, 2 out of 5?
Out of 5? 2 out of 10? 1 out of 5. There's no sleaze in it at all. Not from Spader.
It's
a sleazy film.
There is one sequence that I point to.
All right, what's
and
the
I think this
secret?
Is. I think this is going to come up with one of the things that he took from this film.
All right. Okay.
I think there's two things that he took from this film.
All right.
Three if you count the video camera, because he definitely took the video camera.
Okay, all right, yeah.
If it wasn't Spader's private video camera already.
To be fair, the video camera that he took from this film does not count. He didn't put that in a museum, he just used it.
He just used
the video camera.
He definitely took the footage, the sped-up footage of him having... Oh, here's the thing. Here's the thing that makes this film, like, pretty sleazy. And here it is.
Okay.
In order for there to be a sped-up VHS of like him and this bird going at it for ages, right, they would have had to have filmed in normal speed him and that bird going at it for ages. That's pretty sleazy.
Yeah, okay, good point.
In other words, Spader was like, so wait
a
minute.
Like...
No. Yeah, so Spader went, you need a videotape that's long enough that we can fast forward it for quite some time. Like, they roll around on the couch, then they fall off the couch, and like, then whatever, right? I need to make that. Like, I need to film that.
Okay.
And Hanson was like, well, no, we can just have some stand-ins, and so it'll be fine. No. I need to do that. In fact, I need like the set cleared and the camera set up.
Yeah, but I mean, I know what you're saying, but
that's kind
he's
of a
not
bit,
sleazy, in it.
No. There's his character isn't.
His character does not.
Oh, the bit by the fountain where he was kind of caressing her in a kind of disgusting way was pretty sleazy. She's wearing like a backless dress, and he's all like, slimy hands on the back.
Yeah.
But no, I have.
Right, so what does he take?
Points.
What does he take for the movie?
No, I have some key points.
Okay.
The shorts he's wearing when his brother first comes over are ridiculously sleazy shorts. They are... Because I was suddenly like, who is this guy? Until he said, oh, you're my older brother. I was like, these are some weird shorts to be wearing around a male colleague or friend.
Right.
They were exceptions. So those shorts.
Okay.
Definitely those shorts.
Okay.
And the other thing he takes from this is the bunny outfit. He definitely takes the bunny outfit.
He does take the bunny mask, yeah. Agreed, he takes the bunny mask.
And isn't he wearing, like, bunny shoes as well? Like, what's making the squeaking noise?
No, what do you call it? You know, a streamer.
Or, oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What?
Just a squeezer, like a party squeezer, squeaker.
Party streamer. I think it's a streamer.
Okay.
A party squeezer is...
Squeaker.
You used to party squeezer.
Yeah, I know, I didn't mean
that.
That's
something
squeaker.
Else with Spader and a party squeezer.
He definitely takes the rabbit, but there is definitely VH pornography and VHS pornography out there of Spader in the bunny mask doing repellent things to people.
Oh, okay, I agree.
In an order.
He takes the bunny mask. I'm trying to think of if he takes anything else.
He takes the shorts and the bunny mask. Like, that's the outfit that he wears. Oh, and this is the second one in a week where he wears a tuxedo. He doesn't take the tuxedo. I'm just saying he does wear a tuxedo in the sleazy as possible.
I agree. He probably takes the VHS of him fucking the bird. He takes the rabbit mask.
Yeah. I would... Okay. He has one of those art installations in his dungeon.
One of the pictures from the exhibition because it was like all horrible, disgusting...
Yeah, no, he definitely did that. But hang on. Wait.
Because after the day's filming, after the day's filming, right?
Right.
The crew went around, you know, unpacking the set, and they were looking around. Going, one of the pictures is missing. What is that really, really horrible one?
Yeah.
And if you watch carefully, you see Spader with like rectangular shape underneath his V-neck jumper, like going back to his car. So that's it.
So hang on a second.
Okay.
In his basement of his Browns, New York brownstone, he has one of those like television walls that they used to have in like office buildings in the 80s that is made up of lots of little televisions because they didn't have big televisions back then, so they made it. And he has the ability to either have 50 of him having sex with a bird in sped up motion,
right,
or just one enormous one. He can like change,
but only the sped up.
And he has it on a perpetual loop. So he either has 50 of him or an enormous one of him. But either way, it's on a perpetual.
That's true. In the Spader Museum, that's what the exhibit would be. It would be the sped up thing. Is this what it is?
The blue lit.
Yeah.
Grimy couch.
But you remember in his like Museum of Sleaze. I can't remember what we called it. It's like Sleaze Emporium or
Sleazeatorium.
Sleazeatorium. It was like exhibits that he would show people around, and one of the exhibits would definitely be just like you said,
the shorts
and
the
wall of the TVs with the sped up thing of him.
Yeah. And the bunny mask and the shorts.
Yeah.
And the shorts now have a stain on them that he doesn't explain. He just he just points to it.
Yeah. Okay.
And then what was the last thing that you thought he took from?
He snuck out the horrible pornographic picture.
That's it. Yeah, that's what he has.
The pornographic picture that he has. The pornographic picture that he has, he stole from the gallery.
Yeah.
It's hung at an angle.
Yeah.
And it's covered, right, in spat out hors d'oeuvre. Right? Because what happened was the runner, like the runner that he asked to take the picture down for him, was like, you know, because they're hungry, the runners, when they're working on set, was eating, and as they were taking down the picture, Spader said something so disgusting to them while they're taking it down.
It's got volleyball.
They spat out their volleyball all over the picture, and Spader was amused by this, and so kept it just like that,
so that it would be kept,
and then hung it at a skew-if angle on his wall.
Okay,
and it's titled like. Like the intern's disgust or something.
Yeah. So
the intern's disgust.
Is the sleaze rating down to Spader alone?
I disgust the young. That's what the picture would be called.
Is the sleaze rating down to Spader himself, or is it down to the whole movie? Because the movie's pretty like icky.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say I guess it is kind of sleaze.
But Rob Lowe is.
I guess it gets a 2 out of 5. Sleaziness for the movie and a 1 out of 10 for Spader sleaziness. And I don't watch films with Spader in them for other people's sleaze.
No, true. But I still say the fact that he had to film that sex tape.
I agree, like the filming of it was. Would have been. And I'm sure Spader was giving low pointers. Do you know what I mean? Borrow my hair gel. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is what you say to yourself inside your head to remove the light from your eyes, you know?
Yeah. So, okay. So, disappointing. Let's leave it there. So, we've got one more question. All right. So, one of the questions we had from Kerry Mellick.
Yes.
Who I hope has become a dedicated listener, possibly after this episode, not anymore. But anyway, I haven't seen this movie, though I must say, I have never seen Spader not turn in a top-notch performance. I wonder if Spader is an actor who just likes to work. Sure, earning a paycheck is always motivation, but maybe Spader is an actor who enjoys practicing his craft? Question mark. So I think it's more like a discussion point rather than a question.
Okay, I think that's
but
true.
Do we think that he does it for the money, only, or does he do it for the craft?
Well, the only thing that this movie has going for it is that Spader is good at it. There's no doubt about that. He is good. He plays a good drunk in this movie.
Right.
And he plays... What's interesting about the drunk he plays in the movie, actually, is he plays a good, wimpy guy who's drunk and letting himself go,
right,
kind of drunk,
yes,
and it's believable. And the bit where he gets out of the car and you think he's going to throw up, and he just kind of goes back and forth, and he gets back in the car and goes, let's go rob another one. It was like, that was a really top bit of acting.
Yeah.
So I would probably go along with that idea. I think he probably does it.
Do you think that he...
He does it for the souvenirs.
Yeah, he does it for...
He needs to fill out the sleazatorium.
The sleazatorium.
With more disgusting souvenirs.
Do you think at that point where he got out of the car...
unquenchable...
And he thought he was going to be sick. Do you think... I almost said sex then. He thought he was going to be sick. When he thought he was going to be sick. Do you think he does that because he gets a pang of his anxiety again? Like he gets a pang
of
his stomach ulcer again?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be. You're supposed to think, I think in terms of what you're supposed to think at the time that he gets out of the car, that he's like disgusted and appalled and they've gone too far and he's really freaked out and instead says, let's go with another one. So people are like, oh wow, he's really into it. No, we'll get the chat.
Good.
Thanks, man.
Well,
I love it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Cheers. But yeah, I would say I would agree with that. I think he probably does it for the work. Because I mean, I'm sure he does things for the money, but he has done like consistently weird parts that presumably other people wouldn't do. But then he has done things like Stargate and Supernova and what, which I'm sure wouldn't have looked on paper like. I mean, he's an odd leading man, that's for sure.
I think he did this because of the chance to play multiple people within one character.
Yeah, I agree.
And probably because he thought it would be a
thing.
He's
the only good thing in the movie.
I would think that he only did it so that he could do a 5-minute VHS bong scene just so that it could be sped up.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. And when Hansen went, are you two done yet? He was like, no, this has to be the full thing. And Hansen's like, really, James, we only need 30 seconds to a minute. He's like, no.
You're
going to get 10 full minutes.
I think it started off as being a couple of minutes and neither of them could stop. Like, I think once you started with Spader, we'll just go 50-50, right?
That's great. Yeah.
Thanks. Once you've started with Spader, I think it's impossible to stop. I think once you're caught in his web of sleaze, she's probably lucky that he didn't eat her, you know, and absorb her.
True.
Bite her head off. And then just move on.
I'm going to look up just a couple of other things.
But I do think that he is an interesting guy, and he does do things clearly that he finds interesting and challenging and a bit weird, because every film we've seen him in, he is doing something different. He's not just being, you know, a sleazy psychopath. What we like about Spader is, despite the fact that he plays lots of different characters, there's always a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of sleaze poking out through the edges, which is, you know, an interesting thing to have going for you if you're an actor.
Can we add one sleaze point to this movie because of this GQ magazine cover that came out round about the same time as Bad Influence and literally has the sex education of James Spader as a title?
By Trip Gabriel, which sounds to me like Spader's pseudonym when he's writing about, he like writes articles about himself and sends them to GQ as Trip Gabriel.
Oh, also, here's a challenge before next week.
Okay.
YouTube clips of pre-Blacklist, because post-Blacklist he just talks about the Blacklist, it's tedious, but pre-Blacklist Spader interviews, and find one where he doesn't mention weird sexuality. You cannot do it.
Is that possible?
It's not possible.
Right.
It's not possible.
I believe you.
Especially from the whole Crash era. That's all he talks about, is his own weird sexuality. Last thing I want to do quickly is to go through the trivia on the IMDb page. The film garnered a lot of unwarranted PR as it was released roughly around the same time that Rob Lowe's infamous sex tape came to light. Rob Lowe researched his part by watching hours of footage of serial killer Ted Bundy, which is kind of psychotic in itself. Surely 10 minutes of Ted Bundy, well, 5 minutes would be enough.
Just act, man.
In chapter 17 of Rob Lowe's autobiography, Stories I Only Tell My Friends, he describes being at rehearsals in a church off Highland Avenue when he is asked to approve his makeup artist, Cheryl Burkoff. He recognizes her because years before they had been on a blind date together. He describes her as an artist of the face who knows her shit cold. God, this autobiography sounds awful. In July of 1991, he married her. He also suggests that Bad Influence was originally submitted as a writing sample to producer Steve Tisch, the only man with both an Oscar and a Super Bowl trophy. Lowe had originally wanted to play the role of Michael, the average Joe, but was taken to lunch by David Koepp and talked into taking the role of Alex. He describes Tom Brokaw leading the evening news with the Rob Lowe sex tapes and following that item with the news about Tiananmen Square. Nicolas Cage and Kevin Costner were both considered to play Alex, the Rob Lowe character. David Koepp wrote the screenplay on spec at a time when he didn't even have an agent. Kind of obvious, David, I'm afraid. And Patricia Arquette passed on playing Claire.
Very wise, I would say.
So there you go.
I don't see Costner, thank you very much. I don't see Costner in it at all. And Cage would be... What would even happen if you put Cage and Spader in the same screen? Like, I think, wouldn't we all just explode?
I think if Cage and Spader had done this, it would certainly be a lot more interesting. And there is no evidence that Lisa Zane is the sister of Billy Zane. But I'm going to assume that she is. Oh no! Older sister of actor Billy Zane.
Well, thank God.
She apparently speaks Greek fluently.
Lucky her.
So there we go. The Lisa Zane mystery.
And we use the word mystery with next. I don't even know how we're using it incorrectly. Well, I'm a little bit disappointed by Sleazy Spader Springtime Movie Summit. Not meeting up with you and talking to you about them. It's a good laugh, but
I think that's all that matters.
Yeah, I guess like the four movies last time weren't exactly like crackers, but.
Although weirdly,
there was sleaze to talk about.
Weirdly,
I'm disappointed about. It's not been nearly enough sleaze this time.
The funny thing is, there is a part of me, although like it seemed excruciating going through those four films last year, there is a part of me that is longing for those four films.
Well, they were sleazy and weird, and that's what we're really looking for. They weren't good, but they were weird and sleazy, and that's what we really want. And so far, what we've had is misfiring and dull.
Well, everyone's been telling me about the New Kids.
All right.
But then,
well, if anybody's got any other ideas apart from New Kids, I'm saying for film number four, I will be happy to hear.
For film number four, write in. You can get us at.
Didn't you have like a James Spader box set or something?
Yeah, that's what the New Kids is on.
Who else is on there?
Alien Hunter.
I haven't seen that.
I know it's meant to be very good, but I mean, by all means, if you
want
a weird one.
Well, that's on something.
And Storyville, I think, or Story something.
Well, have a look. See what you've got. See if anything strikes you as sleazy. But I'll happily.
I mean, if he's alien hunting in a leather posy patch, possibly. If he's going around the galaxy in a studded thong.
I don't think so. I think it's probably more likely to be like a.
There was a movie poster I found with him where he had dyed black hair, a dyed black mustache, and was wearing an earring.
We have to see that film.
So maybe I'll track that down.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, so write in, give us Spader suggestions before next week. You can write to us at hello@aftermoviediner.com. You can send us a voicemail at 347-669-0053 or on SpeakPipe at speakpipe.com/aftermoviediner. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/aftermoviediner. On Twitter.
Just type aftermoviediner into Google, all right?
Yeah.
Just do it.
Or on the very podcast post that you are looking at right now on the website, we have a comment section. And even a contact us form.
It's not difficult
it really
to write
difficult.
To us in this day and age. We're not asking you to lick a stamp.
I do realise I am...
Or post a letter.
The website is everywhere. Like, you can't... Like, any social media... But Tumblr, you can hit us up on Tumblr or Pinterest or...
Name it. It's like... It's just... It's so ridiculously easy.
Google Plus.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, nobody even knows what that is.
Yeah, what is it?
Nobody knows what Google Plus is. Nobody has a clue.
I'm on there, but what is it?
I know. Google Plus is the ultimate in... Might as well, I suppose. I don't know what it is, but... Google Plus. You know, whenever it's like, whenever I want to support anybody, I'm like, Google Plus, because it costs me nothing and nobody's going to see it.
Yeah. Follow us on Google Plus.
Yeah, if you want.
YouTube, we're on YouTube.
Yeah,
leave us a YouTube
bloody YouTube.
Comment. Leave us a YouTube comment.
Bye. Anyway,
thanks ever so much.
I enjoyed it.
I will see you next week.
I enjoyed it. Huge.
You've been listening to The After Movie Diner with your host, John Cross.
Want to take you down to the side of the city, where the sun doesn't shine and the moon isn't pretty. The slow train crawls and the nights and the days are as warm as the smoke and the heat. Yes, it's neon here, 24 hours of the day. You're sure looking pretty when it's hidden on your face. Look on the corner, take a dollar for her daughter. Well, she's only doing what her mother taught. I wanna take you down. I wanna take you down. I wanna take you right down. I wanna take you down. I wanna take you down. I wanna take you right down. I wanna see you touch and evil in your eye. But all that I'm getting, babe, is the sweetness of life. I wanna see something that I might desire. I wanna take you down, babe, into the mind. Deal's going down, no checks, no plastic. One thing's for sure, never get what you're asking. They're cutting with Johnsons, they're cutting with knives. They're robbing your boots when they give you a shot. I wanna take you down. I wanna take you down. I wanna take you right.